outside. And all them crazy murderers will never run from inside. You try to keep me down cause you see no joy. All them knows them from, so you call a man a boy. I ain't a tie, can't just see. Open up your eyes.
The thing that makes Judaism dangerous to everybody, to every race, to every nation, to every idea, is that we smash things that aren't true. We don't believe in the boundaries of nation state. We don't believe in the ideas of these individual gods that protect individual groups of people. These are all artificial constructions, and Judaism really teaches us how to see that. In a sense, our detractors have us right in that we are a corrosive force. We're breaking down the false gods of all nations and all people because they're not real.
And here we go, folks. It is Wednesday, March the 26th, 2025, the year of our Lord Jesus Christ, King of the Gentiles. And you are listening to today's edition of the Ugly Truth broadcast. Welcome to the program, folks. Hope you're all doing well. Those of you of goodwill, as we like to say often on this program, we don't wish our enemies well, folks, because our enemies doing well means that we're doing very badly. And by very badly, I mean, well, just go watch The Terminator, folks, any one of The Terminator films, and you'll understand what we're talking about. We have lots to discuss today, folks, lots of important stuff, and unfortunately, I'll go ahead and make this prediction now, probably stuff that you're not going to hear in too many other places, at least not the kind of analysis that you're going to hear. And again, folks, like I've said before, this is very regrettable. I wish that it wasn't such a limited discussion. I wish that more people offered the kind of analysis that we try to offer here on this humble little informational endeavor, because I think that if more people did, this confusing puzzle would become less confusing. It would become more clear, and we would actually begin to make a little bit of progress in getting this wild beast put back into its cage. Let's see, a little bit of housekeeping, folks. Anyone who would like to contribute to the costs, to help defray the costs associating with putting together programs of this type, you can do so right there on the page where the program has been loaded up. Yes, folks, we did successfully load the program up onto the Ugly Truth website without having to go through Rumble or BitChute. And so you have been spared the annoying commercials. And again, folks, my apologies. I did not know that they were selling commercials on the program. I find it a really aggravating thing when I'm listening to something really interesting and important, and then I get interrupted by some commercial about fixing your dog's hemorrhoids or his bad breath or something like that. Very annoying. One of the reasons why we find ourselves in the mess that we're in these days, folks, is because, you know, everything that all of the serious discussions that should be taking place simply aren't. And then those instances where there are good, serious discussions taking place, they get interrupted with something completely trivial and unimportant. Let's see, that's the first piece of housekeeping news. Anybody that would like to contribute to keeping this program on the air, you can do so right there on the website. Number two, we received a couple of emails that I wanted to address relative to last weekend's program. One of the listeners commented that I assume in reference to or response to something that I had said on the program about not trusting alternative media outlets these days, including Joe Napolitano's program. And he said, I agree, there are some sketchy people on there. There's some, you know, questionable people, but overall it is it's much better than, you know, what passes for the norm. And I agree with that, folks. If I sounded a little too harsh in my criticism of Judge Napolitano's program, I apologize, because he does have some really good people on there, even though sometimes they say really the darndest things, folks, things that just don't make any sense. But we are lucky that at least we have this platform, with Freedom. I'm sorry, folks. I'm drawing a blank at the moment. With Judge Napolitano's program, where you do get voices on there who at least are willing to criticize the stinking Jews. Now, folks, this is the second item that I have to deal with, because I received an email from someone who was a little put out by something that I said on the last program, where I used that phrase, the stinking Jews. And this person said, you know, that's not a very Christian thing to say. And my response to that, folks, is it's an extremely Christian thing to say. And I'll explain why. Those aren't my words, folks, when I talk about the stinking Jews. Those are the words of none other than Jesus Christ himself. He used that terminology when he was cursing the Pharisees and those under the control of the Pharisees during the last week that Jesus Christ was alive, before the stinking Jews arranged his false trial and his murder. Now, he didn't actually use the word stinking, ladies and gentlemen. What he did is he described his enemies as tombs, as whitewashed tombs, full of the bones of dead, rotting men. Now, folks, if you've ever come across a rotting corpse, you know, like maybe a deer that's gotten hit on the road and it's been sitting out in the sun for 3 or 4 days and it's all bloated, starting to rot, there is just absolutely nothing that smells worse, that stinks worse than death. Something that has died and is in the process of decomposing, there's nothing that smells worse. And you can imagine, folks, what it would smell like inside of a tomb full of the rotting bodies of dead people. So even though Jesus Christ, King of the Gentiles, even though he did not specifically use the word stinking, nevertheless, we can infer that he meant exactly that. That when he was talking about his enemies, talking about the enemies of all mankind, being, as I said, like tombs full of the remnants of rotting bodies, he meant that they stank. They were offensive in the nostrils of God. That their hatred, their dishonesty, duplicity, their hypocrisy, their supremacy, all of the things that have made the Jews, the Jewish people, the followers of Judaism, rejected and spit out of every Gentile society throughout history, going all the way back to ancient Egypt. You can read about it yourself, folks, in the Old Testament, in the book of Genesis, the very first book where Abraham and Sarah are kicked out of Egypt after the Pharaoh has discovered that Abraham and Sarah have pulled a fast one on him. The reason that they have been spit out, folks, is because of their behavior. Now, obviously, this does not mean all of them, folks. When I say the stinking Jews, I'm not talking about all the Jews, because there are righteous Jews. Righteous Jews such as Professor Jeffrey Sachs, that we have praised on this program many times. Professor Norman Finkelstein. Gideon Levy, or Levy, however you want to pronounce his name, from Haaretz. He's a righteous Jew. There are righteous Jews, folks. They're not stinking Jews. They're righteous Jews because they have chosen their humanity over their Jewishness or their Judaism. Okay. And because of that, they have been awarded the Righteous Jew of the Year Award, or of the Lifetime, whatever. So again, folks, especially during this season when we are approaching the Holy Week, where we recount what the stinking Jews did to Jesus Christ in orchestrating his sham trial and his murder. And we recall that during that week, Jesus referred to them as the stinking Jews because they resembled the tombs of rotting bodies. We will state with great authority, folks, that it's a very, very Christian thing to say. Anyway, folks, we are joined by a very special guest today. This is going to be a very in-depth and I hope not too complicated. I hope everybody is going to be able to follow along. They're going to be able to connect the dots and put the pieces of this puzzle together in the way that we will be discussing. Let's see. Our special guest, folks, I'll just go ahead and tell you, it's Stas, once again, folks. And the reason why it's Stas, first of all, he's getting rave reviews. And secondly, folks, because as I've said before, there just aren't too many people with whom I can carry on conversations of this type. When I listen to the kinds of discussions, like, for example, folks, I'm sorry to have to bring it up again, but some of the discussions that take place on Judge Napolitano's show and some of the things that are thrown out there as if they were established facts that don't require any debate or discussion whatsoever, things that I can see are patently incorrect. Like I said, folks, it's just getting harder and harder to find quality people who are able to participate in the kinds of analysis and discussions that we have here on this program. So before we bring up our special guest, folks, I'm going to go ahead and set the stage. Within the last 48 hours, a bomb has gone off not just in the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., but throughout the world. It is the talk of the world, not just the talk of the town. The fact that Jeffrey Goldberg of The Atlantic, a stinking Jew if ever there was one, a devoted and devout Trump hater who spent the entirety of Donald Trump's first administration publishing article after article on his website, on the Atlantic website, about what a horrible president Donald Trump was, how America is going down the tubes. And he gave this platform to all of the neocons, folks, all of the stinking Jews, like the Kagan brothers and like, Elliot Cohen, all of the whole gang that brought us the war on terror, David Froom. The only one that I have not been able to find on the Atlantic website has been Bill Kristol. I don't understand why. Maybe he wanted too much money or something. I don't know. But everybody else who played a hand in bringing about the destruction of Iraq and the Arab Spring and all of this stuff to destabilize the Middle East for Israel's benefit were given a platform to spew their invective against Donald Trump. And so we are supposed to believe, folks, that some type of strange thing, some kind of strange magic happened, that Jeffrey Goldberg was added to this chat group where war plans involving the strikes against the Houthis were being discussed by all of the principal National Security Council players, folks. You had the National Security Advisor, Waltz. You had the Secretary of Defense, Hegseth. You had the Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard. You had the Director of the CIA, John Ratcliffe. You had Steve Witkoff, who was Donald Trump's, who's been his envoy negotiating this peace deal between Russia and Ukraine and the ceasefire in Gaza. All of these people carrying on these conversations about the strikes that were about to take place, and out of the blue, some kind of strange magic happens where Jeffrey Goldberg is added to this conversation and he's made aware of these strikes 2 hours before they took place. This is what we're going to be talking about, folks, and having said that, we might as well go ahead and bring up our special guest, and it is none other than Stas. Stas, are you with us? Please, let's hear your call sign.
I am here. Stas is here, and I'm reminded, I like the way Mike used to say, welcome aboard.
Welcome aboard, and thank you for reminding me, Stas, because there's something very important that we need to discuss. I meant to discuss it. I have to start writing things down, folks, because my memory's starting to go. The news concerning the release of the JFK files, as we discussed on the last post, there's been nothing explosive yet, folks. There are 80,000 pages, but there have been little whispers here and there, shadows and whispers and things like that, where Israel's Mossad has been mentioned, especially with connection to James Jesus Angleton, who ran the counter, what was it? I can't remember what department of the CIA it was that he ran, but he was in thick with Israel. Now, the reason that this is important, as we said on the last program, folks, I don't expect any huge information bombs going off anytime soon. What's going to happen is that this is all going to pan out over the course of weeks and months and years. Somebody's going to pick it up. Somebody's going to go through all of those pages, and they're going to tie together this thread connecting the assassination of the president with Israel's Mossad over the issue of Israel's nuclear weapons and over the issue of what was known at that time as the American Zionist Council, which was the forerunner to AIPAC. Now, the reason that this is important, ladies and gentlemen, is that when this person or this group of people do go about the business of connecting, making all these connections and putting this, the pieces of this puzzle together, Mike Piper's thesis is going to get the, it's going to get the recognition that it deserves. Now, we know that, but here's the important part, folks. If Mike had gone down the road that so many other experts and analysts and, you know, self-degreed PhDs in geopolitics, if he had gone down that road that everybody was pushing him to go down with regards to the Sandy Hook hoax nonsense, okay? If he had buckled, if he had surrendered, if he had cried uncle, and he had said, okay, yeah, fine. Nobody died at Sandy Hook. Gone along with Jim Fetzer and all the rest of these nutcases. Then when this discussion that is going to take place sometime in the near future, as soon as it's brought up, Israel's connection with JFK's assassination, what do you think the response would be if Mike had gone along with all of this Sandy Hook BS, instead of standing firm, standing strong, right up to the very end, folks? Don't forget, he paid for this with his life. He lost his job. He lost his livelihood. He lost his place, his residence. He was forced to move to the other side of the country, all because of this Sandy Hook nonsense. Do you understand a little bit better then why Mike refused to buckle and to take the easy route on this? Because he knew that everything was on the line, and that someday when these stories came out involving the assassination of John F. Kennedy, involving the USS Liberty, the assassination of RFK, 9/11, all of these things, that if these vital pieces of information were getting tainted with this Sandy Hook hoax nonsense, it would just take us back to the very beginning. Stas, what are your thoughts about this?
It's incredible to think about it. I mean, it's one of the biggest stories ever to come out of this country, and our man Mike broke it.
He did. Alone. Nobody else. Alone.
Yeah. Totally. And as we mentioned before, it unlocks the mystery to many, many things in the Republic here.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of other murders, but of the king. And a good man. John F. Kennedy.
Yep.
An honest man. A guy that made the country strong and aesthetically beautiful. I'm really drifting, but they call the Camelot. That was probably some strange thing, but Camelot turned to Oz.
Yep. Well, anyway, the point is that if Mike had buckled instead of standing firm to the very end, then all of his work with regards to solving the assassination of John F. Kennedy, it would have been tainted. It would have been tarnished. There would have been a huge question mark placed over the validity of it. He would have just been considered a kook and a crank and a crazy, like Jim Fetzer and the rest of these people truly are. Anyway, Stas, we've got a very important discussion lined up for today, and it involves, folks, as I said before, the fact that Jeffrey Goldberg of The Atlantic was brought into a discussion involving the strikes on the Houthis. Now, we have some sound bites that we're going to play. Stas, just sit tight for a second. We've got a couple of minutes of sound bites.
Tempers flaring and tensions hitting a boiling point at a Senate intelligence hearing today. Our country's top intelligence leaders were in the hot seat being grilled in the fallout from that explosive article by The Atlantic. It accused the Trump administration of adding the publication's editor-in-chief Jeffrey Goldberg to a group chat on the Signal app discussing a highly sensitive bomb operation in Yemen. That article is now raising major concerns about national security, and senators are demanding answers. Senator Michael Bennett had a very heated exchange with CIA Director John Ratcliffe. Let's play back some of that.
Did you know that the president's Middle East advisor was in Moscow on this thread while you were, as director of the CIA, participating in this thread? Were you aware of that? Are you aware of that today?
I'm not aware of that
this
today.
This sloppiness, this incompetence, this disrespect for our intelligence agencies and the personnel who work for them is entirely unacceptable. It's an embarrassment.
Senator,
you need to do better.
Now, defense officials claim that the group chat app had no classified information about the military strikes on Houthi rebels. Now, that chat included a total of 18 people. Goldberg said some of the names in the group appeared to be Vice President J.D. Vance, Secretary of State Marco Rubio, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth, and the Director of National Intelligence Tulsi Gabbard. Now, in that thread, Secretary Hegseth shared operational details about the strike, including the timing, the targets, and the types of weapons used. After the strikes, the group exchanged emojis, or actually they exchanged emojis, including flames, fist bumps, and American flags. Now, the National Security Council issued a statement saying that the messages seem to be authentic, and they will review how Goldberg was added to that text chain. Now, today, senators repeatedly pressed Tulsi Gabbard to release those messages. Let's listen to this exchange with Virginia Senator Mark Warner.
Director Gabbard, did you participate in the group chat with Secretary of Defense and other Trump senior officials discussing the Yemen war plans?
Senator, I don't want to get into this.
Ma'am, were you on? You're not going to be willing to address. So you're not. Are you denying? Matt, will you answer my question, ma'am? You were not TG on this group chat.
I'm not going to get into the specifics.
So you refuse to acknowledge whether you were on this group chat.
Senator, I'm not going to get into the specifics.
Why are you going to get into the specifics? Is it because it's all classified?
Because this is currently under review by the National Security
Council. Because it's all classified? If it's not classified, share the text now.
Now, Democrats spent the morning voicing their concerns. Just take a listen to some of their remarks.
Every single senator, Democrat and Republican and independent, must demand accountability. I am calling for a bipartisan investigation in the Senate of this mishandling. I am also calling for the defense IG to fully investigate. This is too serious not to know exactly what happened, why it happened, and how to prevent it from ever happening again. Instead of accepting responsibility outrageously, Secretary Hegseth attacked the journalist and called him deceitful. He took the deny till you die approach, even though these messages were already authenticated by the National Security Council spokesperson. Secretary Hegseth's refusal to accept responsibility yesterday was eerily similar to the way he conducted himself during the confirmation process. I fear how he will react to future moments.
Okay, folks, so that was the first of several sound bites that we will be hearing today concerning the first big scandal that the stinking Jews are using to try and at least jam up the president. Now, let's just talk about this for a moment. We already discussed the fact that Jeffrey Goldberg is the one who was brought into this conversation. And those of you out there who use Signal and some of these other apps understand fully well how the process usually works. If you want to connect with somebody, you have to send them a request. They get the request. They accept or they decline. But there's some serious question here, at least according to the director of the CIA, John Ratcliffe, as he was being grilled about this, as to whether or not this is actually the process by which Jeffrey Goldberg was added to this. We'll be playing that soundbite here in just a moment. But where we're going to go with this discussion, folks, is as follows. First of all, this has been the story now for the last 48 hours. This breach of security. It's amazing. None of these people who are browbeating the Tulsi Gabbard and Ratcliffe and Hegseth and Waltz, they certainly didn't behave in have not behaved in the same way with regards to other things such as 9/11. You know, they didn't demand to know about these Israeli Mossad agents that were arrested on the morning of 9/11. But yet now, when it involves Donald Trump, President Trump, and Yemen, folks, which we will be unpacking here in just a few moments, all of a sudden their hackles are up, their backs are up, and you would think that Pearl Harbor had just taken place. Now, folks, what was supposed to be the spotlight of yesterday's hearings wasn't this security breach that took place. What was scheduled to be the spotlight of yesterday's hearings was the annual threat assessment that is put together by all of the intelligence agencies working for the United States government. So we're talking about the CIA, the DIA, the Department of Homeland Security, the FBI, all of the different intelligence agencies that we have, they put together an annual threat assessment, and the Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, is required by law to bring that assessment to Congress. In that assessment, folks, one of the things that was decided was that Iran is not building a nuclear weapon, that Iran does not have a nuclear weapons program, and that the political decision on the part of the political class in Iran, specifically the supreme leader, Khamenei, that his original decision not to allow the development of nuclear weapons by his country has not changed. That discussion didn't get any airing, folks, didn't get any airing because of this other thing that happened involving Jeffrey Goldberg being brought into this discussion. So, is it out of line for us to suspect that Israel had a hand in this breach of security? Stas, let us have it.
Yes. Israel's involved in this breach? I would say most definitely.
Was it the Russians? Did they have anything to gain by it?
The Russians have nothing to gain.
Okay.
By the humiliating.
Was it the Iranians? Did they have anything to gain by it?
No.
No.
Since the intelligence community has found out that they're not going for the nukes right now.
Absolutely, yeah. So Iran would have benefited from this story not hitting the airwaves in the manner that it did, because there would have been this discussion taking place, this rather important discussion, that Iran is not building nuclear weapons. Who doesn't want a discussion of that type to take place before the eyes and the ears of the American people, Stas?
That would be Bibi Netanyahu.
Absolutely, because Benjamin Netanyahu is intent upon getting a war started between the United States and Iran over the issue of Iran's nuclear weapons, folks. Okay. Now, we've got some basic questions that we have to ask here, folks, because, as I said earlier, we have a lot of analysts out there, a lot of speakers and commentators and writers who are writing and saying things that simply aren't true and don't fit into the puzzle. Okay, they fit in the sense that they jam the pieces together, but they don't produce a picture that makes any sense. Now, Stas, since Yemen was the topic of this scandal, and since, as we have been told by numerous people, from John Mearsheimer to Scott Ritter to everybody else out there, that have a very large and loud platform. Since we have been told that Donald Trump launched these attacks against the Houthis in order to please Israel, then why would Israel screw all of that up with a sabotage operation of this type?
If he was used purely as a weapon under their direction, they would never
absolutely
want to let the signal gate come out. In
absolutely
fact, they would have covered it up. They would have called Goldberg from the Atlantic, the Atlantic, which is one of the major enemies of Donald J. Trump. There's
absolutely
no doubt about it. The Atlantic is always there. They're like those neocon Trotskyists.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's like commentary. It's like commentary.
In fact, they go into it deeper than anyone. And I know, as you know, that a lot, that's why you refer to Crystal a lot on the website, because a lot of the ideological meat that trickles down to other journalists on the Post and the New York Times and all of them is stuff that these guys come up with.
Absolutely.
Crystal.
Absolutely.
It is, along with the
Washington Post, it is the voice of the deep state. And by the deep state, folks, what we mean is Neocon Incorporated, the war party, the people who are out to see World War III and Armageddon take place for Israel's benefit. So of all the journalists in Washington, D.C. who could have been included in on this, the fact that Jeffrey Goldberg at The Atlantic was the one, and he's the one who broke the story, means, at least in my opinion, folks, this was an intelligence operation on the part of Israel's Mossad. They are out. I don't know exactly what Hegseth or Waltz has done, if indeed they have done anything, to get on Israel's bad side. But at the very least, what this has done is completely jammed up President Trump with regards to whatever it is that he wants to do in the Middle East. Okay, look who's been brought in on this.
Yeah,
go ahead. Go ahead, Stas.
I got one clue on that. Of course, probably like you are, I'm like looking to see how Pete Hegseth behaves. What is he like? And I was very impressed. He was being interviewed by Mark Levin, and Mark Levin wanted to rope him into war. And Hegseth was like, yeah, we're going to be tough, but we're going to be looking to make some tough negotiations. Like, mm-hmm. He kept saying it.
Yep.
So I was very impressed with him. I mean, him being allegedly, he was being accused early on of like some religious stuff, apocalyptic.
Yes.
So, you know, you're wondering about him, like why Trump got this guy. He stayed very cool with Mark Levin. And I was really pleased with what he was saying. He was saying what I think should be said. Let's get to negotiations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was very impressive. So there again, this guy is now probably getting a bullseye on his head.
Absolutely. Yeah. The whole national security team and the vice president. Now, you know what I found really interesting about the exchange, and folks, I would encourage you to look up some of the screenshots that Goldberg posted showing the back and forth things. There was no mention of Israel in this at all. Now, this is important because, again, folks, we have a whole industry, a whole chorus line of analysts and commentators out there saying that the President Trump launched these attacks on the Houthis because this is what Israel wants. But there was no mention of Israel at all in this, other than the fact that Vice President Vance was concerned that launching the attacks against the Houthis too soon might jeopardize the ceasefire in Gaza. Okay? So my point is, folks, is that for these people who say that President Trump launched these attacks against the Houthis in order to please Israel, you would think that amongst the principals involved in this, that there would be some mention of that. The only mention of any foreign actors in this at all was the Europeans, where Vice President Vance said, you know, we are going to be helping the Europeans out by allowing the free flow of shipping. You know, it's going to increase trade, you know, and so we need to be compensated for that. So, folks, the point is that all of this analysis that we have heard since the launch of the attacks on the Houthis, that this was all in order to please Israel, it's total bunk, folks. And we're going to talk about that, why it's total bunk. We're not just going off of the text thread where Israel isn't mentioned, but we're going to unpack this in a way where you will understand why Benjamin Netanyahu doesn't want Donald Trump, President Trump, hitting the Houthis. As we discussed on last week's program, it is possible, not saying for sure that this was the case, but it is possible that President Trump received intelligence that there was a false flag attack that was brewing that was going to involve the Houthis attacking an American naval vessel. President Trump stepped in to prevent this from happening, and that this was the real reason for the strikes against Yemen. Stas, your thoughts?
Yes, that is definitely on the table because that's what folks are going to get here, discussions where the people on your show do not immediately jump on Trump and say, forget it, it's over. His plan has been this way all along.
Yep.
Or the now the usual thing, the way people do discussions is he is worse than Biden.
Right. Worse than Biden. That's what I've been hearing now for the last couple of weeks, ever since the strikes on the Houthis. Folks, I want you to just do the numbers here. 50,000 people were murdered, minimum 50,000 people were murdered in Gaza because of Joe Biden's bowing down forwards and backwards for Benjamin Netanyahu and for Israel. But somehow Donald Trump is worse than Joe Biden because he launched these strikes on the Houthis when they, and folks, look, I don't support the strikes. Okay. I wasn't happy to hear about it. I'm not happy to hear that 50 or 60 civilians lost their lives in it. It totally jams up what the president is trying to do in preventing World War III, or at least it appears to be that. Nevertheless, these people who are out there saying that he's worse than Joe Biden, what? How does a sane, intelligent person come up with something like that when the math simply isn't there? I'm sorry to interrupt you, Stas. Go ahead.
Absolutely not. It's 50 or 60,000 under, they've confirmed 50. I've actually heard 62 or 64,000 Gazans. Under Joe Biden also, on the Ukraine war issue green-lighted long-distance weapons, and that there might be going into the level of maybe a million or more people mm-hmm. dead over there.
Mm-hmm.
That's him. That's not Trump. And I wish people would use some detail.
Why is this important, Stas? Why do we need to have this conversation about these experts and analysts who throw these ideas out there that get traction very quickly and very easily, such as President Trump is worse than Joe Biden? Why is it important that we discuss this?
Because we're dealing with an enemy that would never call their prime minister stupid or just use his last name or blah, 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 you know, or on and on. And they give him respect. And then things like that. And, you know, if a guy's trying to save our lives, we got to back him and pray that he can pull this off.
Yeah, don't help the enemy. The guy that's trying that's got a knife to your throat and a gun to your head, don't help him along by throwing rocks at the guy who's trying to get the knife off your throat and the gun off of your head.
Yes, yes. And every time all things lead back to the peace table with Gaza, with Mr. Barack Rabib's Trump's peace book, if people would read that book, they could show just how much energy Trump and his people put into trying for it.
Absolutely.
More than any other presidential administration, they went for it.
Okay, we're going to listen to another soundbite here, Stas. Are you ready for another one?
Yes.
Okay, folks, this is the interview that Tucker Carlson had with President Donald Trump's chief envoy and negotiator, Steve Witkoff. It was a long interview. I only captured really the last couple of minutes of it because it was the most important part of the whole interview. I would encourage you to watch it, folks. Those of you who consider yourselves to be, political watchers and things like that, you'll understand a lot better why we go to the lengths that we do here on this program in, getting our facts straight and being a stickler for details, as Mike Piper used to say. Let's give this a listen, folks.
So one last question area, which is Iran, which unfortunately I sidetracked around it. But you said when I asked, what is the government of Israel's plan for the region? What are the borders it hopes to solidify at some point? Like, what are the boundaries of the country, et cetera, et cetera? You said your first response was, we need to solve for Iran. Like, that's the issue that overhangs everything.
Mm-hmm.
There's enormous pressure on the U.S., on the Trump administration from within and from outside to have a military conflict with Iran. Like, I know that. The president that's not his first, this is my read. If he wanted that, we'd already have it. He seems to want a diplomatic solution first. He wants to try that first.
Yes.
That's fair.
That's fair.
Do you think that that's achievable?
Yes. I do. Look, he sent a letter to the Iranians. Usually it would be the Iranians sending a letter to him. Remember, the Iranians' air defenses have been eviscerated in that attack from Israel. They're open to attack today.
Yeah.
They're a small country compared to ours. We could, I think we would, if we used overwhelming force, it would be very, very bad for them. And so you would, and this is not a threat. I'm not threatening. So if the Iranians ever listen to this broadcast, this is not me issuing a threat. It's the president who has that authority. He would issue.
But you're describing the reality as you understand it.
Correct.
Yeah.
So under those circumstances, it would be natural for the Iranians to reach out to the president to say, I want to diplomatically solve this. Instead, it's him doing that. Now, I can tell you that he's not reaching out because he's weak, because he is not a weak man. He is a strong man, maybe one of the strongest men I've ever met in my life, maybe the strongest man I've ever met in my life. Actually,
I
think he is that person.
Whatever you think of Donald Trump, even Trump haters would have to acknowledge that's kind of indisputable at this point.
Yeah, he is a strong man.
Yes.
And I'm going to say this, the strongest man I've ever met. So with that all said, he wrote that letter. And why did he write that letter?
For people who aren't aware of the letter, can you just roughly describe what it said?
It roughly said, I'm a president of peace. That's what I want. There's no reason for us to do this militarily. We should talk. We should clear up the misconceptions. We should create a verification program so that nobody worries about weaponization of your nuclear material. And I'd like to get us to that place because the alternative is not a very good alternative. That's a rough encapsulation of what was said, roughly. And the president has said that. He's said that, so I'm not telling you anything top secret or anything of that sort. The Iranians have reached back out. And I'm not at liberty to talk about the specifics, but clearly through back channels, through multiple countries and multiple conduits, they've reached back out. I think that it has a real possibility of being solved diplomatically, not because I've talked to anybody in Iran, but just because I think logically it makes sense that it ought to be solved diplomatically. It should be. I think the president has acknowledged that Iran, that he's open to an opportunity to clean it all up with Iran, where they come back to the world and be a great nation once again and not have to be sanctioned and being able to grow their economy. Their economy, I mean, these are very smart people. Their economy was once a wonderful economy. They're being strangled and suffocated today. There's no need for that to happen. They can join the League of Nations and we can have a better relationship and grow that relationship. And that's what he's presenting. That's the alternative he's presenting. I think he wants to deal with Iran with respect. He wants to build trust with them if it's possible. And that's his directive to his administration. And hopefully that will be met positively by the Iranians. And I'm certainly hopeful for it. I think anything can be solved with dialogue, by clearing up misconception and miscommunication and disconnects between people. I believe that, by the way. And the president is a president who doesn't want to go to war. And he'll use military action to stop a war. That's when he actually wants to use military action. In this particular case, hopefully it won't be necessary. Hopefully we can do it at the negotiating table.
I hope for our sake you wind up in Tehran.
I hope I do too, or someone else from the administration. This is a little bit more complicated, this one, because it's nuclear and we're going to need some real technical, it's just a little bit more complicated, but I think it'll begin with someone from the president's team. It could be me. It could be me and other people. It could not be me and somebody else, but I am going to welcome, that opportunity if I'm involved.
Amazing. Amazing.
Okay, folks, so that was Steve Witkoff, President Donald Trump's chief negotiator and envoy, both on the issue with Ukraine and Russia and with regards to Gaza. And he was involved in this conversation that was hacked into by Israel's Mossad and that has now blown up into this scandal. Now, a couple of things that Witkoff said that are extremely important. Number one, actually, it was Tucker Carlson who said, that the president is under enormous pressure, both inside and outside the United States, meaning Israel's deep state here in the United States, and of course, Israel herself, to go to war against Iran. And Tucker Carlson ended that by saying it's obvious that the president doesn't want to go to war. If he did, we'd already be involved in war. And Witkoff said, no, he doesn't want war. He's a president of peace. He definitely doesn't want a war with Iran. But he is willing to use military force in order to prevent war. That's what the strikes on Yemen were about, folks. And we're going to explain that now in a little bit better detail. This notion that has been tossed out there as just as a given, that President Trump struck the Houthis because this is what Israel wanted, is false, folks. Just as much as Benjamin Netanyahu and all of these Torah terrorist warlords in his government need the hostages to remain in Gaza so that they can justify continuing their slaughter of Gentiles there and as part of incorporating Gaza and the rest of the Arab East into greater Israel. Israel needs the Houthis doing exactly what they're doing, folks. Okay? Israel's not worried about the Houthis. All of this stuff that we hear from a lot of these quote-unquote military experts about how the Houthis have got these super sophisticated weapons and they can, you know, they can strike, you know, within 6 inches of any territory and is, they haven't done anything, folks. They haven't done anything. Israel's not worried about the Houthis. They need the Houthis there causing trouble so that when an Israeli submarine launches a torpedo and hits an American naval ship, leading to huge loss of life, that then it's just a USS Liberty situation, only this time they succeed. They need to make a believable story out of it that the Houthis are responsible. Why, folks? Because the Houthis are backed up and supported by Iran. So President Trump striking the Houthis in the fashion that he did, this did not come as welcome news to Benjamin Netanyahu, irrespective of whatever he may have said. I don't know what he said about it. But he wasn't happy. They need the Houthis doing exactly what they've been doing in order to set the stage for what Israel's planning to do with regards to hitting and sinking a U.S. ship and ultimately blaming it on Iran. So, do we understand a little bit better now why Israel, through her Mossad and through this sabotage operation with the Signal chat group, why they have screwed everything up for President Trump with regards to his ability to maneuver in the Middle East? Because now, folks, you just wait and see. If it's not in the Israeli press, it will be within microseconds. There are going to be all of these op-eds appearing mostly in the right-wing Israeli press, but I'm sure it'll be on those outlets that are left of center as well, saying we can't trust the Americans to meddle in our business in the Middle East, whether it's a peace deal with the Palestinians or whether it's dealing with the Iranian issue, because they don't have any security protocols, as evidenced by what just took place. Stas, your thoughts?
Oh, yes. By the way, that interview with Witkoff, pretty much as close as humanly possible, proves your thesis that Trump had to strike the Houthis. That some kind of false flag operation was in the mix.
Yep.
He's pretty much almost just saying that in that. We've got to sometimes do an attack to stop an attack.
Exactly. Yeah.
Make war to stop war. It's a very rarely used thing and really interesting.
Yeah, and just for the record, Stas, I'm sorry to interrupt you again, but folks, we don't support what happened. Okay, we're not happy to hear about 50 plus civilians losing their lives. Look, the Houthis are brave people. They're brave fighters. They're fighting for the Palestinians. But nevertheless, we have to step back and we have to look at the bigger picture here. If the situation there in the Red Sea was a prelude to another USS Liberty type situation, only this time using one of those sophisticated German-made submarines, the Israelis actually managed to sink a ship and kill, God forbid, thousands of American servicemen. What is the president going to do? What is our peace president, you know, no more endless wars president, what is he going to be forced to do? Right? You have to look at these things through these eyes, through this lens, and not be seduced by what you hear from various people out there on the internet saying that he did all of this in order to make Benjamin Netanyahu happy. Stas, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead with your thoughts again.
No, not at all. I was just giving giving credit to where it's due. Your observation of that is brilliant, man.
I wouldn't go that far. I know it's not brilliant. Here's why. This is why I'm so animated and aggravated. Because it's RFS. Do you know what that means, Stas?
I don't know that acronym.
RFS. Real freaking simple, folks.
Yeah.
It's like putting the pieces of a puzzle. It's like pouring water out of a boot with the directions on the heel. All you have to do is put the pieces together in the way that makes sense, and then wham, bam, you've got a picture in front of you that makes sense. So, folks, again, I'm sorry to have to talk in this elevated and animated voice, but these are very serious things that are taking place right now. Okay, all of us have got the razor blade to the throat and the gun to our head. It's called nuclear war, and we've got one guy and a handful of supporters that he has in his administration who are trying to prevent this. So let's not allow ourselves to fall in easy emotional trap of joining in with the rest of the gang when something like what happened with the strikes on Yemen takes place and we start saying that Trump is owned by the Jews. Stas, your thoughts?
It would be incorrect to not point out the brilliance of the signal leak.
Absolutely.
This is brilliant. As you have said, number one, they are going to be going to the peace table and like, we can't go to the peace table with these amateurs. You'll have leaks.
Yes. Yep.
That is awesome. Also, it riles up the Democratic DNC base to do what they love to play Rachel Maddow. These guys
absolutely
are so stupid.
Absolutely.
They don't even know how to use the encrypted devices and they'll be going on that for the next years.
Well, Stas, probably. what I'm concerned about, because if you listen to the exchanges taking place between these Democrats who are grilling Gabbard and Ratcliffe, they keep hammering that word classified, 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 classified. Now, the response on the part of the Trump administration is that the leak happened because one of Waltz's staffers was the one who supposedly included Jeffrey Goldberg into this chat. I don't believe that, folks. As of this moment, I'm 51% against the notion that because how is the staffer going to get a hold of the national security advisor's phone to do this? Okay. I mean, just think about it. You have to have the phone in your hands. It's possible, folks. It's possible. But I think that the more likely explanation is that the Israelis hacked into it and they are the ones who sent the invitation to Goldberg. In fact, I'm looking at a news story here, folks, that just appeared on National Public Radio yesterday, and it is entitled, "Days After the Signal Leak, the Pentagon Warned That the App Was the Target of Hackers." Now, the story talks about it being Russian hackers, but as we discussed earlier, folks, the Russians have nothing to gain from this, okay? The Chinese have maybe a little bit to gain from it. The Iranians have nothing to gain from it. The only international player that stands to gain from this are the Israelis, okay? Because they want to bust up Trump's team, President Trump's team, for bringing an end to this, pulling the fuse out of this ticking time bomb known as World War III. So I think that what happened is that Unit 8200, Israel's version of the U.S. National Security Agency, they hacked into Waltz's phone. They sent the invitation to Goldberg. Goldberg accepted it, whether he was brought in on the conspiracy or not, I don't know. But they knew where he was going to go with it if he was brought in on it. And all of this was done just prior to when the Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, is scheduled to give her threat assessment to the Congress, wherein she states that Iran is not developing a nuclear weapon. Now, there's another angle to this, folks, that we're going to try to squeeze in here. as quickly as possible. I haven't developed it entirely. Stas and I have not entirely developed it, but I think that there's something there. Right now in Israel, everything is total upheaval, folks. You have hundreds of thousands of people out in the streets protesting against Netanyahu for two reasons. Number one, because the war has started again and the people know that their hostages are going to get killed. That's number one. They're not out there protesting because they feel bad about the Palestinians being blown to bits. No, folks, again, it's that same Jewish mindset, which is, you know, we care about ourselves, and that's it. But they're out in the streets and they're protesting a lot, very loudly, folks, and they're protesting about the firing of the head of Shin Bet, Ronan Bar. Now, there were several news stories that came out within the last week indicating that there is this fight, there is this gang war going on within Yahoo's government, between the military, between the intelligence services, and between the government. And it's over the issue of foreknowledge of October 7th. People have been pushing for a state commission of inquiry into finding out the quote-unquote intelligence mistakes that happened that allowed October 7th to happen. Remember, folks, that's the excuse that we have been given now for the last 18 months, is that it was all a big intelligence failure rather than the fact that Netanyahu and his people not only knew that October 7th was coming, but that they had their people on the ground in Gaza who were ready to go in to Israel and to create some of these, you know, to engage in some of these things that we have, that have been part of the lore of what happened that day. The rapes, the beheadings, the children being thrown into ovens and all the rest of that stuff. I know you have people in our quote unquote movement who have debunked that, or they claim to have debunked it. But I think, folks, that to some degree it did happen, and it was these Israeli spies who did it. There's just too much to risk throwing a narrative out there like that without some type of proof on the part of eyewitnesses who saw it themselves. So Ronan Bar and the Attorney General and some of the other left of center elements there who can see where things are going in Israel, that they are, that everything is leading inexorably towards a repeat of 70 AD, they are pushing back against this. They know that there is this tidal wave of world war that is coming and that Israel's going to get swept up in it. And they're pushing back against Netanyahu and these crazies. Now, folks, I don't have the proof for it, but I think that it is well foundationed that Donald Trump's administration, his intelligence people, are there on the ground in Israel, and they are helping out these people who are pushing against Netanyahu and these crazies. Ronan Bar, and folks, I'm not singing his praises. He's not a saint. I think he's got dirt under his fingernails, and he's got blood, innocent blood on his hands. I'm sure that he ran some of these Mistarvim spy units that were engaging in acts of terrorism on October the 7th. But nevertheless, the fact that he is pushing for a state commission of inquiry into uncovering Netanyahu's role in this means that I think Trump and his people turned him. They made him a deal. They promised him immunity if he will testify. And what just took place, folks, with regards to this signal sabotage operation was Netanyahu's way of getting even with Trump, because Netanyahu knows that when Trump said about Netanyahu he should be impeached for what happened on October 7th, that this was Donald Trump's announcement that he plans to run Netanyahu out of office, and everything that we're seeing take place in Israel right now is part of that process. Stas, your thoughts?
This is yet another thing that you talk about that other people don't talk about. When people discuss the state of Israel and espionage and politics and all that, it seems to be a one-way street thing.
Right.
The Israelis run everything, or Trump is a man of honor and he fights them back. But if Trump, who's supposed to be a man of honor, has to make some moves, they're like, no, he is wrong. He's gone. He's sold out. He's betrayed us right away. Mm-hmm. And they seem to do this a lot. And then if Trump does something good again, they kind of forgive him.
For five days.
Right. The attention. Yeah, you had actually recently explained to me the process. It's pretty funny. But they're mad at him. And I think even Alistair Cook has gone. It was like, oh, the Yemen strikes. And now this stuff. He's usually optimistic. There's another gentleman. I hate to keep using Judging Freedom, but it's probably the best show out there now.
Yeah.
He was like, people have to understand the enormous pressure on President Trump. So, I mean, you know, maybe you have to cut and paste a long statement before you talk about this situation that says, remember, we're dealing with the richest people in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And the most powerful spy agency and, you know, all kinds of people that just naturally act as Sayanim and Mistavin and mm-hmm. the helpers and everything. I mean, and on and on and on. And also another one of the greatest weapons, you're also one of the few people that talks on it, is Kristol and Goldberg. They're the intellectuals that feed the people to make war.
Absolutely.
To make public relations war.
Absolutely.
Which is what this is in part.
Mm-hmm.
This public relations war with pens and keyboards is going to decide whether or not we perish in a nuclear war.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why this signal penetration is absolutely brilliant. I mean, they've gummed up the works already for Trump and his team.
Yep.
And now they've as you mentioned, they now have a pretext to refuse to go to the negotiation table.
Absolutely.
We can't trust you guys. You guys. And now they have to fight this stigma that they're idiots thing.
Yep. Right.
And that's a lot of pressure on Gabbard, because she's in the intelligence area.
Well, not only that, Stas, but you know, I forgot to finish my thought earlier.
Oh,
this business. No, no, not you. It's my fault. This business where this one senator was grilling over, he kept classified. Okay, folks. So, you know, they've already been tossing out the terms violation of the Espionage Act. Okay. Which means that, you know, the disclosure of classified information that can harm the national security of the United States to unauthorized persons is a violation of the Espionage Act. So it's not just a matter of painting all of these individuals going all the way up to the vice president. Not just a matter of painting them as incompetent. Now they've got this dark shadow of possible legal action over them for violating the Espionage Act. Okay, that's why they have been so careful, why the president's people have been saying no classified information, no classified information, and the other side is hammering that. No, this was classified. Goldberg wrote another piece that he put out today where he listed in greater detail some of the discussions that were taking place over this unsecured chat that would probably meet the definition of classified, folks. So this is going to be much bigger than simply an embarrassment for President Trump. He may have to wind up replacing his entire national security team. Think of, again, folks, who was involved in this? The vice president, the National Security Advisor, the Secretary of Defense, the Director of National Intelligence, the head of the CIA, the head of the State Department. Who else? Steve Witkoff. 18 people, 18 principals. If they all find themselves, I mean, yes, it's a stretch, folks. Since you know the attorney general's office is firmly in Trump's camp, but you know it's just going to be a matter of time before they start talking about the 25th Amendment or impeachment. Stas, your thoughts?
Yeah, definitely. And you just unearthed the most important thing. Their intelligence told them that Iran at this time not got a nuclear weapon and they're not going for it.
Mm-hmm.
And what better way to try to, cloud that up, jam that up, put grease, put dirt in your face.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't seem to talk tonight. Sorry.
Yeah, you're doing fine.
But to screw that up, because this is huge. That is the reason. And of course, you guys out there that think Trump is Illuminati, of course. He's got to get on TV every night and go, I'm not going to let that Iran get that nuclear bomb.
Yeah.
He's going to say stuff like that every night. But it's all right that he says it because there's no pretext. That's the reason for going to war. The reason for killing everybody in Gaza was to rescue these hostages, which is ridiculous, but that's the reason they gave. So
mm-hmm.
They had to go with some kind of pretext to do that bullying, that evil. And if that's taken away, if there's no reason then there's no reason to invade.
Yep.
There's no reason to invade.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we found out later on that there was no WMD. And that's why Scott Ritter's very famous. But in this case, they're going to make that contention and that's what they want. They're just dreaming of bombing this place. And of course, they got a plan to bomb. Another weird thing I don't know if you thought of, and I don't know if I'm off the mark on this. Were they planning to, through this leak, tempt the Houthis to take out a ship? Because
right.
If their allies were monitoring, or they are, they'd be like, hey, you got an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Take a shot. It's not out of the possibility that they could have been using this leak to do that.
Yes.
And I think you're going to start to see more and more experts coming up. This is very serious top secret information.
Mm-hmm.
This is grounds for, I don't know the rules if they can get Trump on it, but they can make Hextech, Pete Hestek and his team stand down.
Oh, absolutely. At the very least, they can blow up his national security team at a time when he is trying to negotiate ceasefires between Russia and Ukraine and a ceasefire in the Middle East. And he has to have that team, folks. He has to have the National Security Advisor, the Secretary of Defense, the Secretary of State, the head of the CIA, Director of National Intelligence, he has to have all of those people in order to do what he's planning to do. So if you're Benjamin Netanyahu, how do you blow that whole thing up? You invite Jeffrey Goldberg to participate in this discussion and then write a piece about it that hits the internet the day when the Director of National Intelligence is supposed to be testifying in Congress that Iran is not building a nuclear weapon. Stas, we are just about at the end of the program here. I know we jumped all over the place. I appreciate so much that you're able to keep up with it. Do you have any other thoughts that you want to impart before we say goodbye to the listeners?
I don't know if we say it too much because I think we're both stunned that just these kind of conversations do not take place. I am noticing more and more this one-sided thing. I love John Mersheimer.
Yep.
The Israeli lobby book.
But
even him on some of these things,
I know.
He's really caked on it, you know? He doesn't allow for the fact, you know, unless maybe they don't want to speculate on it, but you're the only person I've seen that says probably Trump's got some people on the ground involved in politics in Israel.
Sure. You know? Well, we know, Stas, I'm sorry to interrupt again, but we know that this has happened before because Netanyahu complained specifically about Bill Clinton meddling in Israeli domestic politics. He specifically complained about Barack Obama meddling in Israeli domestic politics because Netanyahu blamed Clinton for Rabin being installed as prime minister and pushing through the Oslo Accords. So if they were doing it back then during the Clinton and the Obama administrations, then you know that Trump has got his people on the ground as well. And they are stirring things up in Israel, creating pressure on Netanyahu because Trump knows that Netanyahu is going to blow up the world if he's not removed from power.
I swear, I think you're the only one that's brought up the fact that Trump has some legitimate popularity in Israel.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot.
I don't know why they don't talk about that either. Yeah. That I've noticed. It just seems very one-sided in these discussions. I mean, I'm not taking anything away from these guys. They're brilliant. But they have their audiences and they can't turn the ship and they don't want to lose anybody by
telling the ugly truth.
Telling the ugly truth and with details that are ugly.
Yes.
And messy. And that, you know, that these guys are in a game to the death and that, you know, and I think I talked to you off the air. I'm coming up with this term, like, will Trump have to do like a Coventry?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is he, unfortunately, I hope he doesn't have, is he going to have to shed some more blood to stop the whole thing from going?
Sure.
I hope not.
Yep.
Or something that he won't really be able to back out of too easy. But he did that. It was uncharacteristic of him, honestly. Mm-hmm. It doesn't, and people are linking up to the fact, they're saying because he did this strike on the Houthis that he's got to make general war against Iran.
Right.
And it's not true.
No.
It's the reverse. It's like Witkoff said, he's doing an attack to stop an attack.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly.
Which proves how dangerous this situation, that the fact that the president has to do this stuff shows how risky this is, which is lost on people. Still think that people, you know, I don't like Trump and his haircut, therefore I'm dying for him to get caught with Russiagate.
Yep.
And they just don't like it. And that's an American pastime. And it's a frenzy now. I notice people are whipped up into a frenzy. They just want to see this man go down.
Yep.
And maybe when they're melted in a nuclear fire pit, they'll realize they had thrown their weight behind the wrong thing.
Absolutely. And you know what? One last thing I want to put out there, Stas. We discussed this on a recent program. You know, the fact that Benjamin Netanyahu is a right-winger and that he has a right-wing government, this does not mean that they won't use left-wing elements in the United States to put pressure on Trump. They did it the first term. They're doing it now. This is something that, you know, people don't seem to grasp in trying to, you know, in understanding how Israel does things. They will use anything. They'll work with Nazis. They'll work with radical Muslims. They will, you know, even if it's a right-wing government like Netanyahu, you know, where he's not particularly popular amongst left-wing Jews in America, he will use those left-wing Jews to go against Donald Trump if it creates political pressure on Trump. He did this during the first term, and he's now doing it again. This is something that I think people just don't seem to grasp about, you know, how flexible the Jews are when they wage war against us. They, you know, whereas we have rules where we say, you know, there's just some things that we won't do. We won't, there are some levels we won't stoop to in order to achieve our goal. The Jews do not think that way, folks. They don't. Stas, this has been a fascinating discussion. Cannot thank you enough for your contribution to it. Thank God we have you around to contribute to this. Anything you want to add before we tell everybody goodbye for the night?
Yes, you guys, anybody listen to those clues, listen to what Steve Witkoff said, and also observe things. Observe, there are some guys that are untouchable. Like, I never seen a left or right news source ever give Crystal a hard time, or David Frum.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these guys, that's proven that they are big.
Yeah.
They are the guys that are setting the rules, and they are willing to go for it and do anything. Mm-hmm. Incredible that the Atlantic magazine has inserted themselves right in this story itself.
Yeah, and by the way, folks, just in case you didn't know, Jeffrey Goldberg, obviously a stinking Jew, and of the worst type, folks. He actually left college here in the United States so that he could travel to Israel and join the IDF. And he served the IDF as one of these notorious prison guards, guarding and beating up Palestinians during the, I believe it was the Second Intifada. So he is the worst kind of them, folks. He's actually a Torah terrorist killer for the IDF. Stas, thank you very much for coming on with us once again. Hang on there for just a second. I'm going to close out the program, but I want to talk to you off the air. Okay, folks, once again, our supreme, sincere thanks to Stas for coming on. Fascinating discussion. Hope it made sense to you. I know we were all over the place. We'll try to pull everything together in a more comprehensive way next time. This is the problem, folks, when you're out there basically on your own charting new territory. You know, when Mike was here, we'd spend hours every day talking about stuff like this, stuff that other people weren't talking about. And, you know, it made the task a little bit easier, rolling that big boulder up the mountainside. And so, like I said, you know, when all the other fish are swimming in that direction and we are swimming in a different direction here, it's hard to pull it all together. In a way that makes sense and is easily understandable. Anyway, folks, thank you for being here. Hope you're all doing well. Resurrection Day is approaching, folks. Holy Week is approaching. When Christians and Muslims around the world remember the person of Jesus Christ and what he had to go through in doing battle against the stinking Jews. And never forget that, folks. Okay, because as much as we have been talked into believing that he died for our sins, the bottom line, folks, is that he was murdered by the Jews for daring to go up against them and their plans for global domination. That's it for today, folks. This Wednesday, March 26, 2025 edition of the Ugly Truth Broadcast. As we end saying every time, folks, pray for a miracle, because we sure as hell need it.